at one point we say that we are a refugee in India, but legally we are a foreigner here. So neither you are a nationality of this country nor the citizen of Tibet, which is already occupied by China. So through this research, I also found that there are some individuals who have found belonging here in India. One of the problem is when you move out from Tibetan community, it's like a new world to you, and you have to know each and everything. Everything is new to you. The culture, you get culture shock. That's why they feel that neither I'm here nor I'm there. It's better I find my own belonging by choosing Indian citizenship so that I can have a identification, I can have a belonging. I was there for 3 days, and all 3 days I've noticed at least 5 to 7 Tibetans taking passport. Whereas when it comes to Tibetan taking Indian citizenship, it's a taboo or it's a least talked about. I think what is because I think the city is here, and there were a few individuals who said that, like, I want to take Indian citizenship and take voter ID so that I can get a get into a political position. So when they were in Dubai airport, so they threw the IC on the floor. So that has traumatized herself so much that she still feels that it is just the yesterday that happened.
Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans is a podcast presented by the Foundation for Nonviolent Alternatives, where young Tibetans share their personal stories, experiences, opinions and journey.
Desdile, namaste, and welcome to FNVA's podcast Unsilenced Voices of Young Tibetans. In today's episode, we have with us a very special guest. She recently completed her doctoral degree from the Gandhigram Rural Institutes of Department of Sociology with her paper Changing Dynamics of Indian Citizenship for Young Tibetans in India, an Interpretive Study, exploring a much engaged yet taboo topic among the Tibetans, which is the acquiring of Indian citizenship legally. She is among the several Tibetan women pioneer in our diaspora, making waves through her research work. Welcome to our show, Dikichidila. So, Dikichidila, firstly, I would like to ask you, what prompted you to pursue this very research on Tibetans and their status of citizenship in India?
First of all, I would like to thank you, Dandula, for, and your team for inviting me here to be part of this podcast. And talking about my research, what made me to take up this citizenship research is because of my own identity issue. Because when I was in college, I realized, while filling the form, I realized that there was no option for nationality of Tibetan. The nationality was Indian or foreign. So neither I'm an Indian nor a foreigner. So I feel that I'm a refugee and I lack identity in India. And that's how I started to make up my mind that if I wanted to do a research, I would do on the, my identity. And for my PhD thesis, initially I proposed a proposal about the identity crisis. And then my guide suggested that identity crisis is a vast topic. So it is better if you take something which is relevant to your interests and to the current affair of Tibetans. And that's how I chose citizenship as my research for my PhD thesis. So that's how I ended up doing research on citizenship.
Indeed, Dikla, and when you bring up the very central theme of identity crisis, I think this is something that we Tibetans in the diaspora go through constantly. And recently, I was in some ways privileged to attend the Future of Tibet conference, where a lot of the participants, like, one of their major concerns was identity crisis. So how do you think, through your research, can we sort of come out of this crisis, if there is a way, that is?
One thing is, yeah, definitely all the Tibetans, we have this identity crisis, because at one point we say that we are a refugee in India, but legally we are a foreigner here. So neither you are a nationality of this country nor the citizen of Tibet, which is already occupied by China. So we are in the middle of finding our own identity. And when it comes to this identity, to our identity issues, I think citizenship also can give future Tibetans an alternative. If you wanted to be a refugee, fine. But if you wanted to become a citizen, there is an alternative, which is Indian citizenship. Through the claim of passport or voter ID, one can become nationality of a nation.
As mentioned before, you did a very thorough study and you followed this up when you recently presented at the Young Scholars Conference hosted by the Tibetan Policy Institute. So what were your findings in your research, and what was the most surprising and also the least surprising aspect of it when you were doing research?
I found this question a very interesting when I saw it. One of the most least expected was the issue of IC, in terms of going abroad, in terms of if you have a RC and the issues of getting a job opportunities, any other opportunities. The most another one is I always assumed that before doing this research, I always thought that most of us, like all the young generation Tibetans, all of us want to return back to Tibet if we get the freedom. So in this research, I also found that there are two or three individuals who did not want to go back. So that was very surprising for me, because I always thought that we Tibetans always wanted to go back to Tibet. But then through this research, I also found that there are some individuals who have found belonging here in India and did not want to go back to Tibet. So that was the, I think, least expected, because I did not expect that kind of. So that was the finding of it, the most at the least.
And when you talk about how there were a few Tibetans whom you were able to interview saying that they did not want to return back to Tibet, like, if I may ask, what were their age category in that level?
Yeah, they were very young, like they were 18, two were 18 and one was 19. So they feel, they how they express is, they want to go to Tibet not as a permanent citizen or a permanent resident, they want to go back to Tibet to visit as a tourist. So that was their reason. That they have mentioned.
Maybe I'm wrong, you can interject me, but I feel that maybe these very youngsters, since they were likely born in India, like that's my assumption based on their age, maybe do you think like being born in India, raised up in India, they feel more sort of closeness and affinity to India, but being of Tibetan origin, there is a conflict also to, you know, associate yourself with Tibetan, which is right here in my opinion.
I think suppose in my according to my age category, we have some historical narratives from our grandparents, so we feel very much attached to the to Tibet, whereas these youngsters, they were born like very lately, most of their grandparents and parents were passed out, and then they could not relate directly with the history. So I think one is their upbringing as well.
Okay, so basically the bridge is important to connect Tibetans.
Yes, because in my, for example, personally in my case, I can connect very much with Tibet because through my grandmother's narrative about how Tibet was, how it looked, how they came into exile. So these are the it's a reminder for us that you have the strong Tibetan background. So whereas in terms of, I'm not generalizing that all of them are like that, but those who I've interviewed, they did not have that kind of a narration by their grandparents. So they somewhat distanced themselves from the Tibet.
Digila, you've been coming out with research on this very important topic. So what are your follow-ups on this? And do you think like this will have a major impact when we discuss Indian citizenship for Tibetans?
Definitely. For now, I might not have reached to that level to make an impact, but I'm sure, like, if I keep doing this research continuously on citizenship, how about the identity or the struggle of Tibetan identity in claiming nationality in India, so I feel somewhere it will make impact in the future. But I'm sure, like, I still need more opportunities to open and then follow up what are the policies that kept on changing for years. So I need to do on that.
And being a Tibetan woman who was growing up in India as a refugee, like, what were the struggles and opportunities when it comes to your journey from a student, from a child to now a researcher?
Definitely, when I was in school, we did not have much problem because you live in Tibetan community, so you're comfortable with everything and you have everything what you want. So when you start going to college, when I came out after my class 12, when I went to college, then there was this, I face a lot of problem, like in terms of speaking English, because I did not, though I know how to write it, but I did not know how to speak English. So we have to follow up with the classmates based on their dress code, because you don't know their name, so you are very shy kind of a person. And then slowly you become aware of the larger world, right? It's not just about Tibetan community, or it's not just about speaking Tibetan, it's about exploring what are the opportunities. Then slowly when I in my academic journey, when I reached PhD, so I applied for a UGCS fellowship. And then I was very hesitant to apply because I'm a refugee there, and I did not know whether I will be selected for the fellowship. And luckily, I got all the documents provided by the government of Karnataka, and from my university, I got the scholarship. So again, in this journey, I was always worried, I was always scared or hesitant to take some opportunities, because at the back of your mind, you feel that, oh, I'm a refugee, I may not be eligible for this. But then slowly, there are opportunities which every individual as a Tibetan, I had to explore by myself. And then I think somewhere I made good use of what are the opportunities. That's what. But other than that, I did not face much of difficulties. One of the problem is when you move out from Tibetan community, it's like a new world to you, and you have to know each and everything. Everything is new to you. The culture, you get culture shock. Everything is new. But gradually you assimilate with them, and then you get used to it.
So, Dikla, do you think this is like a very strong aspect of Tibetans? Us being able to adapt. We are refugees, but in some ways, us Tibetans in the diaspora, we are thriving. Our level of adaptation seems to be very strong.
One thing is, if you move out from Tibetan community, and if you still go with the Tibetan group of Tibetans, like for example, if I join some college and if there are more Tibetans, again we become very community oriented kind of a thing. But if you are an individual single Tibetan going out with a different diversity of culture and everything, you get more opportunity and you get adapted easily. Because you do not have any choice, you do not have, because you have to get along with the people. So personally what I feel is, when I joined college, there was no Tibetan in my class. So it was a very good opportunity for me to learn English, to adapt with the various culture, to adapt with the others' way of living. So it was much, much, much easier for me. But whereas I found some of my friends who have always been with Tibetans, they find it much more difficulty in getting adapted with, because they do not want to accept the others. They feel that others will put aside of me, and they do not approach them. So whereas in my case, I do not have choice, because all are outsiders, so you have to get attached to get into the group.
Definitely. I think you really brought out the concept of alienation here.
Yes, yes. So one I would like to add here is, when it comes to alienation, in my thesis also is there. The young Tibetans, they feel alienated, not just from the Indian government or the Indian society, they feel alienated from Tibetan government, Tibetan society itself. Because young children, some of the participants who I have interviewed, they mentioned that they feel alienated inside their own community, because they do not have any share in the settlement or the property or anything, house, whatever the name, it's the share, everything is named under the name of their grandparents and hasn't changed yet. So they still feel that they are alienated from India, from the Indian society, as well as from Tibetan society as well. So this is like a new finding for me, because that's why they feel that neither I'm here nor I'm there. It's better I find my own belonging by choosing Indian citizenship, so that I can have a identification, I can have a belonging or a place, a property or a own home. So that kind of finding was also there.
So Dikla, what you're saying is like this sort of alienation among the Tibetan youths, and there is a prevalence of this alienation, and the solution that they have come across is applying for Indian citizenship. So how valid do you think this would work in the longer run, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I feel that either we have to, the CTA should change the policy about the name changing. If the grandparents have passed away or something like that, so the name should be transferred to the younger generation, so that they can find a home in a place. But otherwise, they have to choose other way, which is Indian citizenship. So if they have a money to buy a property or something like that, so they can find outside the community, which will be a trouble for the community itself, and which will be a difficulty for the preservation of Tibetan language and culture. Because suppose if one Tibetan moves out of the community and completely assimilate with the Indian, definitely his identity, his language, everything will be diminished. So I feel that the policy should be changed one way, and choosing this alternative, citizenship as an alternative to to run away from the alienation. It's the individual's choice, I think.
Indeed, and on top of this, Digila, like something that is very something that really catches the attention of my mind is how there's a large gap between the Tibetans in India and Tibetans in, like, beyond India, I can put it, like, not only the West. I mean, Australia is not the West, but people call it the West. So how Tibetans, you know, like, who migrate after coming to India, migrate to the foreign nation, they sort of apply and there's no stigma there. But why do you think there is a large stigma when it comes to Tibetans applying for citizenship in India?
Yeah, I noticed that there were some photos in Instagram I've seen where they have shared in the US that some Tibetans have got the green card, and it's momentary for them, it's a achievement for them, whereas when it comes to Tibetan taking Indian citizenship, it's a taboo or it's a least talked about. I think what is, because I think the CTA is here, and the initial moment of Tibetan refugee, the being in exile, have always been in India. So I think the pressure of preserving culture struggle is more here in India than outside India. So I think that is the case.
I mean, you have researched a lot on the Tibetan community in exile. So till now, from your research findings, do you feel there are any spaces where we Tibetans can improve upon and sort of complement and supplement the already existing and vibrant Tibetan freedom movement?
Again, when we talk about the Tibetan movement, when I link with the citizenship study, most of the majority, I mean, I can say that all of them have aligned themselves as a Tibetan through their green card, green book, right? So green book, they feel that I'm attached with the Tibetan identity because I pay for the green book and I still have the green book. So many of them find that the green book is the way through which they align with the Tibetan movement. In some of the participants, they said they are Indian citizen, but they still take part in Tibetan struggle movement, like the protest happens organized by RTYC or Tibetan Women Association. So they are actively taking part in, and they find that it's their right because of the green book that they have. So I think green book is the main source of consideration as a Tibetan identity.
And when it comes to the green book, I've come across how at times, you know, it's very difficult, even though you want to pay, sometimes it becomes difficult to pay. So do you think there is a way to solve this issue, or do you think we Tibetans should take the onus and, you know, follow the rules accordingly?
Yeah, I think so. Because recently there was this issue that many people have raised, issue that the amount paid for the green book has been increased. Mm-hmm. So many people were worried, and many of them objected also, because why increase that? So I don't know. Personally, I feel that it's our responsibility as a dependent. It's our responsibility to pay for it voluntarily without having a doubt at the back of the mind, because it's your duty to pay for it, because you are here, you are known for it as a Tibetan because of the city or the facilities provided. For example, if you live in a refugee settlement, the supporting document, whatever you need, CTA provides it. So it's the responsibility of every Tibetan to pay for it without any doubt. I feel that.
Indeed, Digila. And you know, you bought how CTA plays a central role here, which is also known as the Tibetan government in exile. So living in one of the largest Tibetan settlements yourself, which is Bailokopi, do you feel there is a large distance in terms of communication between itself being in South India and Dharamsala, which is sort of the de facto capital of the Central Tibetan Administration?
Definitely, because when it comes of any communication, earlier we did not have, if you look at 10 years back, we did not have access to Facebook or like that. So whatever the information comes from CTA reaches to the settlement very lately. So by that time, most of the Tibetans living in Dharamsala might have applied for the job. If there is any job announcement, that might have already been filled when the announcement comes. Now we have access to the media through Facebook or the other social media or any website. I think the communication gap has been little reduced, or that because we have access to the information which has been uploaded today. We can access in Bylacopy today itself. So I think the gap has been decreased by, I feel that. Yeah, earlier it was there. And when it comes to job or when it comes to scholarship or anything, so most of the people who are selected are from the north because they get to apply before that. So those in the south, we have very limited individuals who have taken such scholarships. So I think, not just the political way, it's like in the socio-economic, whatever communication we have, it does have some sort of gap is there.
Indeed, and I believe based on this, I think the current Kasha, the 16th Kasha, the cabinet has come across this very concept of e-governance and sort of digitizing the whole system to, which rightly you say, like making things more accessible and making the communication gap reducible to such an extent that what you announce right now is like seen and accessible to all the Tibetans throughout the world. So based on this, what does the current conclusion of your research entail for the larger Tibetan freedom movement, and what message do you think it sends to our very sisters and brothers in Tibet under PRC's occupation, in the sense that we Tibetans are taking Indian citizenship?
So, for example, if you look at the Jews, they have scattered all over the world. They were, but then when they got after the World War end, they started going back to Israel. So I think we might also do that, because I have a few participants who have spoken about the temporary citizenship, which means that they want to take citizenship in India just for temporary. And temporary in the sense they want to take the citizenship until Tibet gets freedom. And then when we move back to Tibet, they want to, you know, the citizenship and move back to Tibet. So that kind of individuals are also there. Not necessary that those who are claiming citizenship are the, we cannot generalize stating that all of them want to become Indian citizenship and settle. Not like that. There are some individual or few individuals who want to take citizenship for in India, and then when Tibet gets freedom, they want to move back. So it is kind of like that. So I think it also sends a message to the Tibetans around the world or in Tibet that those who are taking Indian citizenship has not lost hope about Tibet struggle, but they are hopeful. But for now, for temporary, for time being, they are looking for themselves. So I think that sends a message like that.
And on top of this, in my opinion, like I see that, you know, like maybe even you might agree on that matter, how if a Tibetan sort of legally applies and gets the Indian citizenship, a vast network of opportunities arises, and maybe ourselves, you know, bringing a larger stake in the whole Indian political setup, socio-economic, can be more impactful and in some ways might sort of help more in the Tibetan freedom movement, because that is what something that we have not been doing right now in India, for that matter. I mean, you can see in the West how there are certain Tibetans who have gain access to a lot of opportunities through their citizenship and are sort of contributing through different means in the freedom movement.
It is a very important thing. And in my thesis also, there are six categories of Tibetans, and one is the participatory citizen. So in that category, what the research tries to say is there are some individuals who are trying to become a citizen to be more participatory in terms of political. And there were a few individuals who said that, like, I want to take Indian citizenship and take voter ID so that I can get into a political position, and somewhere they can get access to the parliament and speak about the Tibetan issues in India. So that is also, they are also a part of them, these individuals who are willing to become a participatory in terms of political scenario or political conditions of the Tibet, and to uplift the future situation of Tibetans in India or around the world to get back to Tibet. So I think these individuals also plays an important role in the question that you have raised. One thing I would like to add here is I think we also need to change some of the policies, like for instance, in case of IC, many people face a lot of issue with IC traveling outside India. And then in some cases where people also face that they have been boarded back to India from the other country which does not allow refugees to land. So I think in that case, we need to redefine the policy about IC. What are the other alternatives that can be? For instance, in the France, they provide travel document, right, which is accepted by most of the countries. So in case if we get such for the Tibetans, I think it would be a much easier for the Tibetans to travel outside India, and the number of claiming Indian citizen also might decrease, because many of the Tibetans who take Indian citizen is one of the main is passport is to travel outside India for a business or for a tour or to meet a family reunion or whatever reason it is. One day the thing that the problem they have is with IC. So I think if we get a this is just a suggestion, if we get a travel document we just recognize, I think it would be much more easier for the Tibetans to travel, and the number of taking Indian passport also might reduce it. Another one I would like to add is the policy which says that Tibetans who have taken Indian citizenship cannot settle in refugee settlement, right? So I think that also creates a problem for us. Because if we have a large number of Tibetans moving out of the settlement, then the preservation of language, culture, identity, it's a doubtful, it's a question for everyone. But if we allow them to take Indian citizenship and live in the Tibetan settlement, and that way we also can they also can help in preserving, and they also can preserve their identity without any issue. So I feel these two are the very important thing, because many people say that if taken an Indian citizenship, one must move out of. So Tibetans starts to worry, like if I take citizenship, then where will I go? What will happen to? So it's not just about this generation. If this policy stays for a long, and if the Tibetans starts to move out of the settlement, and in the next generation, I don't think there will be very little Tibetans who would speak Tibetan language, who would dress up as a Tibetan, so that also is another concern.
And like when you mentioned the thing about IC and traveling issues, I mean, I myself faced that problem recently, and it is a big problem in a sense, like if you look it to a microscopic level, like you had to stand in the line for a much longer duration, and when you stand in such a way you sort of feel nervous even though you're not doing anything wrong for that matter. So that sort of raises a lot of question in your mind, whether like should I really continue in this path of an IC or whatnot, or should I apply? And I think not only this, and about the whole settlement of how, you know, making Tibetans with Indian citizenship accessible to these very settlements would not only preserve the Tibetan culture, like you said, but also strengthen the whole community there, in my opinion.
Yeah, in the same case, a few of my participants, they have also faced the same issue with the Indian IC. So when they were in Dubai airport, so they have threw the IC on the floor. So that has traumatized herself so much that she still feels that it is just the yesterday that happened. So she, and with this kind of situation, we also start to internally stigmatize ourselves. Like, if I do this, I have IC, I'm worried. Like, you stigmatize yourself. Not that the others are stigmatizing you, but you still stigmatize yourself because of such kind of experience. So I think if we have certain alternatives, such as travel document, then IC, I think it would be much, much easier for the younger generation to travel and still maintain the Tibetan identity without being Indian citizen, without taking Indian citizenship.
Decline. I think like we Tibetans who have the power to make such changes, and not only the Tibetans, Indian government for that matter, can listen and can see the very problems that we are facing right now and can work on it definitely on a very large scale level and bring concrete changes which definitely helps the Tibetan community in India, which they have been supporting us gratefully till now, and I believe they will continue to support us.
One thing is when we take recently, I told you as well, I was there in the passport office. So I was there for 3 days, and all 3 days I've noticed at least 5 to 7 Tibetans taking passport, which is very alarming for us, because just imagine if in 3 days if 10 to 15 are there, just imagine in a month how many are taking. So that's also a concern, and that's also a Tibetan government city also should look on that, because it is very important, and we also need to understand what are the other reasons apart from what I found in this research. I'm sure there might be other reasons. For instance, I found so many monks taking it, and I'm sure for them the reason might be different from the layman. Definitely, I'm sure they are not looking for a job opportunity in the government, Indian government, they might not be aiming for such thing, but they might be aiming for, there might be some other reason, or they might have aiming for something else. So I think we also need to look on that, why a large number of Tibetans or both laymen and monks and whatever, why they are taking it. Because when it, when we talk about Indian citizens, we align with our struggle, our movement, our preservation of identity, culture and all those things. So if a monks, they also are Tibetan, and they also have a responsibility of preserving the, not just about the language, not just about the social thing, and they also have the responsibility to maintain the Tibetan language, Tibetan religion. So how about that? We also need to understand how this will impact the preserving religion. So I think in the long run, we also need to do such research or interview some of the individuals who can bring more light on the citizenship and the issue of and the Tibetan struggle, how they are going to go hand in hand.
Indeed, and in my humble opinion, I believe, like, personally, the monks, because I've known a few of my fellow relatives, you know, applying for Indian citizenship, and the main purpose for them is, like, the ease of travel. Because, like you rightly say, like, when you get to the immigration officer, when you stop there for, like, unknown reason, you definitely sweat a lot, and, you know, you think a lot. Because, and eventually some think so much that, like you rightly said, they stigmatize themselves. And which is very problematic in my opinion. So, I'm sorry, like, I would like to have engaged more, but we are running short on time. So, do you have any messages to our fellow Tibetans worldwide, and also the plethora of Tibet supporters who continue to stand in solidarity with us Tibetans?
First of all, I would like to thank those Tibet, those supporters who have always been, for example, my sponsor, like my Chindale Rang. So we, she has been a supporter of Tibet for a very long time, for the almost more than 30 years. So I salute to them and I thank them personally. And from and what message I would like to give them is continue supporting. And for the Tibetans, whoever is taking a taking citizenship in any country or any. Take the citizenship, it's your, it's individual choice. We cannot say that it's individual right. So, but we must also not forget the history. Like, we must not forget what is await ahead. Like, we haven't solved our problem yet. We are still with the problem. So I think we must be hopeful, and we must look forward for the Tibetan struggle, for Tibetan freedom, and then continue supporting whether you have citizenship or not. So I think we must keep we must keep alive of this struggle until we get freedoms. That is the message I would like to. I don't know whether that becomes a message or my request or whatever it is.
I think it definitely becomes a very clear message from you, being someone born in India, researching on this very sensitive topic, and, you know, ushering more light, and how, you know, even though one takes an Indian citizenship, or any citizenship for that matter, it does not diminish the very fact that we Tibetans are alive, are very much fighting for our Tibetan freedom movement. And I believe that this conversation with you definitely brings a certain new light, a new narrative. So on that note, I would like to thank you, Vidhikila, coming here in such short notice, expounding much light on this very talked about. And, you know, I think in the next few years, this is going to be something that many researchers would work on. And as you rightly say, there are many aspects which we need to cover. So thank you. Thank you so much.
More updates and videos via FNVA. Click on the link and please subscribe to our channel. Thank you for watching.